One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
It's a peculiar thing, isn't it? The way memory clings to the simplest gestures, a wave through a window, a smile shared at dusk, a child's voice calling out into the night, expecting, no, knowing, there will be a reply. Tonight's story doesn't begin with fear. It begins with kindness. A man tending to his garden, a pocket full of humbugs, a child who felt safe, seen, and heard by the old man just over the fence. But what happens when a familiar ritual refuses to end, even after death? Our narrator swore he saw him, not once, but night after night, a man who had already been buried, a man who kept waving. Is this grief playing tricks on a young mind, or is it possible that some bonds are strong enough to hold through the veil? Let's get to the letter. They write, "Dear Tony," this is going back to my first experience with something I still can't quite explain, and even after all these years, I remember it clearly, as if it happened just last night. I grew up in a quiet cul-de-sac in a small English town, the kind of place where everyone knew everyone. The houses were close, but the lives lived within them often felt like entire worlds apart. Ours was a modest two-story home, and out back, a narrow garden stretched down to a weathered wooden fence. Just on the other side of that fence lived Mr. Ellis. To me, Mr. Ellis was everything a grandfather should be, though he wasn't actually family. He lived alone in a brick house with pale yellow curtains and a garden he tended like it was sacred. He grew rhubarb, rows and rows of it, and took pride in giving bundles to my mum when it was ripe. He always wore a flat cap, always had a story to share, and always carried a tin of humbugs in his pocket. You'd never find him without it. He listened to whatever we kids had to say, myself and my six brothers and sisters, as if every word we said mattered. I'd lean over the fence while he pruned or pulled weeds just to chat about school or the birds he'd spotted that day. There was something calming about him. I think we all felt it. At night, when things slowed down and the shadows grew long, we had this little ritual, one of those traditions that feels silly to outsiders, but means everything to you. My bedroom window faced the back of Mr. Ellis's house, and without fail, just before bed, my brothers and I would lean out and call, "Good night, Mr. Ellis." And every night he would appear in his bedroom window, backlit by a soft amber lamp, and waved to us with a gentle smile. That wave, it was constant, reliable, the last comfort before sleep. Then came the day I still wish had never happened. It was a Friday just before my 8th birthday. I came home from school and found my mom in the kitchen crying. She wasn't alone. Mr. Ellis's daughter was there too, though I can't remember her name anymore. Their faces were pale. I could smell something cooking, but no one was paying attention to it. I asked what was wrong. My mom took a breath and told me to sit down. "Jamie," she said, "Mr. Ellis went into town this morning, and he collapsed. He had a heart attack, love. He didn't make it." The words hit like cold water. I remember nodding, maybe saying, "Okay," but my chest felt tight, like I couldn't breathe. I left the kitchen, climbed the stairs, and went straight to my bedroom window. I pressed my forehead to the glass and stared into his garden. Nothing moved. The rhubarb plants drooped. I waited there until the sun set, then fell asleep with my head against the sill. A few days passed. The funeral was scheduled for a Wednesday. I told Mom I didn't feel well and begged to stay home from school. Whether she believed me or not, she agreed. A neighbor came by to sit with me while the others went to the service. I barely noticed her. That afternoon, as the sky turned gray and the wind picked up, I climbed back to my bedroom and stood by the window again. I whispered, "Good night, Mr. Ellis. Sleep tight." And then I saw him. There, clear as day, standing in the window of his own bedroom, waving. Not a trick of light, not a reflection. It was him. Same flat cap, same smile, same steady wave. I blinked, rubbed my eyes. He was still there. I didn't scream. I didn't cry. I just stood frozen, staring, while something inside me twisted. My head told me it was impossible. My heart said otherwise. That night, when my brothers were getting ready for bed, I told them to come to the window. "We have to say goodnight," I said. They looked confused, but I insisted, so we lined up, just like we always had. "Good night, Mr. Ellis," we called out, and he waved back. This time it wasn't just me. My brother Tim screamed and ran straight to the hallway. Robert dove under the blanket and wouldn't come out, but I just stood there staring and raised my hand to wave back. Our mom burst into the room. "What's going on?" she asked, alarmed. "Mr. Ellis," I told her, "he's waving." She looked out the window, but the room across the fence was dark. "There's nothing there," she said. "You boys are just upset. It's been a hard week. Get into bed." But I knew what I saw. I knew what we all saw. And the next night I stood by that window again. I didn't tell my brothers. I didn't call out. I just stood in the silence and whispered, "Good night." And there he was, waving once more. It went on like that for 6 more nights, a quiet ritual, just him and me. No more shouting, just a small whisper, a nod, a wave. On the 7th night, I whispered, "Good night, Mr. Ellis." Nothing, no light in the room, no silhouette. No movement. Just the curtains, unmoving. Something in me knew he was gone. Truly gone. And yet, I didn't feel alone. Even now, all these years later, I think about him. Every time I smell rhubarb cooking. Every time I taste a humbug. Or, oddly enough, whenever I catch the scent of rubber bands like the ones he always had wrapped around his tools, it hits me in the chest. He was there. I don't care what anyone says. He was really, truly there. And I believe he came back. Just long enough to say goodbye the only way he knew how. After that last night, I didn't see him again. The window stayed dark. His garden went untended. The house grew quiet. His daughter came by a few times to pack things up. Then, like so many endings in childhood, the house was sold and someone else moved in. But the memory lingered. In the months that followed, I couldn't help but wonder, why me? Why did I see him so clearly? And why did he keep coming back? I wasn't the only one who saw him, not that first time. But after that, it was always just me. As a kid, I didn't have the words to explain how right it felt, how natural, even when it was impossible. And then something odd started happening, little things. Quiet things. A few weeks after his final wave, I was sitting alone in the kitchen doing homework. My mom had stepped out, and the others were upstairs. I'd opened a fresh pack of colored pencils, and as I reached for the red one, a smell drifted in. Faint, but sharp. Rubber bands. It came from nowhere. No source, not the bin, not the cupboard, not the table, just the smell. exactly like the ones Mr. Ellis kept looped around his seed packets and bundles of rhubarb. I stood up and looked around. Nothing. It faded just as fast as it came, and that was the first time. It didn't happen often, maybe once every few months. But it was always when I was alone, and always when I needed comfort. I didn't tell anyone at the time. It felt too strange, too fragile. Like if I talked about it out loud, it would disappear. Years passed. We moved to a new town when I was 12. The new house had no garden, no window rituals. But sometimes at night, lying in bed, I'd look toward the corner of the room, almost expecting to see that soft wave from across the dark. I never did, but I could feel him. And then, one spring afternoon, in my late 20s, something happened that made it all come rushing back. I was walking home from work and passed a small market. They had rhubarb out front, thick, red stalks with giant green leaves. I hadn't seen any in years. On a whim, I bought some and brought it home. That evening, I tried to cook it the way my mom used to. As it boiled on the stove, the kitchen filled with that unmistakable scent, sweet, earthy, sharp. I closed my eyes, and it was like being 8 years old again. I could see the garden, the old wooden fence, the tin of humbugs, and then there it was again, that smell. Not rhubarb, rubber bands. It didn't make sense. There were none in the kitchen. I checked the drawers, the counters, even the bin. But it wasn't about finding the source, not really. I knew what it was. It was him. It had to be. And just like that, it stopped. No fade out. Just gone. I sat down at the kitchen table and cried for the first time in years. Not out of fear, not even sadness. But because I realized I hadn't just imagined it. I wasn't crazy. He'd stayed with me in his own quiet way all along. Since then, it's happened a handful of times. Always when I'm alone. Always when I'm low. It's never visual, never loud. Just that scent for a moment. Strong and specific, then gone. A nudge, a wave, a whisper. I told my partner once after they caught me standing at the window staring out into the dark, like I used to. I explained everything from start to finish. They didn't laugh, didn't try to explain it away, just nodded. And that was enough. Now I have children of my own, 3 boys. Just like my brothers and me, they share a room, and every night before bed, they lean out the window and shout, "Good night, Granddad," to my father, who lives across the garden in a flat above the garage. It's not quite the same, but it's enough to make me smile. And sometimes, only sometimes, I think I catch something out of the corner of my eye. A flicker in the upstairs window across the way, a shape, a shift, I look. Nothing's there. But I always say it anyway, just in case. Good night, Mr. Ellis. Wherever he is, I think he hears me. Yours sincerely, Jamie Whitfield. It's easy to dismiss stories like Jamie's, a grieving child, a familiar routine, a mind looking for comfort in the wake of sudden loss. But when multiple witnesses see the same thing, and when it repeats night after night, you have to ask, was this something more than memory? We often think of hauntings as terrifying, malevolent, but not all spirits return with unfinished business or anger. Sometimes they come back for something far simpler, to reassure, to say goodbye, to remind us that love doesn't always die when the heart stops beating. From a psychological perspective, Jamie's experiences could be explained as grief-induced hallucinations, especially in children. The brain, trying to protect itself, can create vivid moments of familiarity, especially when a ritual is involved. That would account for the vision, maybe even the scent. But what about his brothers? They saw him, too. And those repeated episodes of that distinct rubber band smell occurring decades later, that part lingers. Some would say that's just sensory memory, but others, especially those who've experienced loss, know better. They felt it, too. A brush on the shoulder, a familiar cologne, a whisper in the silence. Maybe spirits like Mr. Ellis don't come back to haunt. Maybe they come back to comfort. To show us that kindness can echo beyond the veil. And if that's true, maybe the most powerful hauntings are the quiet ones. The ones where no words are spoken, no doors slammed, no chills run down your spine. Just a man waving from a window. Letting a child know he was never really alone. Good night, Mr. Ellis. Wherever you are.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
The new McCrispy strip is here. Dip approved by ketchup, tangy barbecue, honey mustard, Sprite, McFlurry, Big Mac sauce, double dipped in buffalo and ranch, more ranch, and creamy chili McCrispy strip dip. Now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.